Song of Solomon is a beautiful book, very captivating book with two featured characters, as we know, a man and a woman. And these two are seen throughout the book interacting with one another, expressing their feelings, expressing their love and their appreciation for each other. The book is in the poetical section of the Bible. It was written as a story told in song. We're told that it's a song in the very first verse. And this song is meant to chronicle the love between this man and woman, but more importantly, to teach us spiritual truths. It is a story of love, with a very special story. And many, of course, view it as merely a love story between Solomon and some Shulamite woman. And it could be, but it, no matter how you look at it, it is something far greater than a love story between a man and a woman, something far greater than a love story between Solomon and some Shulamite woman, if that's the route you want to take. It's something far greater. First and foremost, it is a song that portrays the special loving relationship between Christ and his bride, the kind of church that Jesus organized during his earthly ministry. And as we've said many times before, what is being said here also has many other applications. Certainly has application to the life of the individual child of God concerning their personal relationship with Christ. And throughout the song, we see a very special relationship between these two. We see a very special bond. We see a very special friendship, very special affection that existed between this man and woman. It's an ongoing communion, an ongoing togetherness, an ongoing sharing of interest with each other. And I believe as such it serves as a picture of the relationship also between a child of God and Christ. And as individual children of God, we ought to be able to identify with what we read here in Song of Solomon. We'd like to read verse 4 of chapter 1, and then we want to go over to chapter 2 and read verses 3 and 4. Both of these passages are the woman speaking. "Draw me, we will run after thee. The king hath brought me into his chambers. We will be glad and rejoice in thee. We will remember thy love more than wine. The upright love thee." In chapter 2, verses 3 and 4, again, the woman is speaking. "Has the apple tree among the trees of the wood, so is my beloved among the sons. I sat down under his shadow with great delight, and his fruit was sweet to my taste. He brought me to the banqueting house, and his banner over me was love." Now, in these verses, the woman is expressing her desires and her feelings for the love of her life. She is also describing her own personal experiences concerning this individual. And this brought her great joy. We see there in verse 4, "We will be glad and rejoice." So this experience is something that brought her great joy. We read in verse 3 of great delight. The main focus of this message will be there in chapter 1, verse 3, "The king hath brought me into his chambers." Also in chapter 2 and verse 3, "I sat down under his shadow." And also in verse 4 of chapter 2, "He brought me to the banqueting house." And what we read in those words illustrates something very wonderful, illustrates something extraordinary that is possible for you and I, the saved, every single day. In fact, it ought to be descriptive of our life. We ought to be able to read those verses and say, "I know what you mean. I know what you mean." So I want to speak this evening on living in the enjoyment of his chambers, shade, and banqueting house. We want to consider two main points. First of all, we want to look at the spirit and attitude of this woman prior to her experience of Christ or of this man. And then we want to look at the actual experience of this woman. But first of all, consider the spirit and attitude of this woman prior to the experience that she talks about. And as we look at her attitude, what we're about to see concerning her is not just something that was occasional, but it was something that was continual. And if what we see in the attitude of this woman is true of us, then we also share in her personal experience of him. There are seven things we want to notice about her attitude concerning this one who was really the love of her life. First of all, he was a reality to her. When she speaks of him all through the song, she does not speak of him as an abstract. She does not speak of him as a theory. She does not speak of him as an idea, nor does she speak of him as a doctrine, but she always speaks of him as a person, as a person. And would do us well to examine how we speak of God. Do we speak of him as a person? And as a person, I'm not talking about like you and I, but I'm talking about who he is, his character, his nature. She speaks of him as one whom she had a personal knowledge of. She does not speak secondhand. She speaks as one who had a personal knowledge of this one. She spoke of him as reality. Notice in chapter 1 and verse 2, she is praying, or she is expressing her desire, "Let him kiss me." Now that's real. "Let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth." In verse 4, she spoke of his chambers. In chapter 2, in verse 3, she referred to him as my beloved. And she referred to his shadow and his fruit. And she says, "He brought me and his banner over me." So she spoke of him as a reality in her life. She not only spoke of him, but she spoke to him. And we see this throughout the song, but again in verse 2, after she makes a statement of her desire, "Let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth," she then speaks to him, "For thy love is better than wine." For thy love. She's now speaking to him. So she speaks of him. She speaks of him often. And we ought to speak of God often. But even more importantly, we need to speak to him. We need to talk with him. So she spoke to him. There was a personal connection with him. There was a personal involvement with him. And again, you see this all through the song. And this needs to be true of us. If we're going to experience what she experienced, then there must be an involvement with him. There must be a personal involvement with the Lord. Secondly, she was very much in love with him. Chapter 1 and verse 7, she says, again, she's speaking to him. Well, no, she isn't. She's speaking to the daughters of Jerusalem. But tell me, O thou whom my soul loveth, where thou feedest. So, my soul loveth. Chapter 2, verse 3. She referred to him as my beloved. In both of those places, she speaks of him as the love of her life. My soul loveth. That speaks of the depth of her love. It speaks of the degree of her love. My beloved. And you notice in both cases, it is present tense. Her love is now. It's not what it used to be. It's now. It's not what it shall be. It's now. She speaks of the fervency of that love. My soul loveth. That is, she was speaking of something that was very intense, something that boiled over within her. She was speaking of a love without reservation. She was speaking of an uninhibited love, a love of priority. If your soul loveth, that is a love of priority. It is a love that takes priority. My beloved, or the one that I love. It was a love that caused excitement, as you see, as you read through the song. It was a love that attracted her to him. Love has an attracting power. And this was a love that attracted her to him. It was a love that made her sensitive to him. If you love somebody, you have a sensitivity toward them. You have an attraction to them. And no different here, no different when we're talking about love to God. It was a love that filled her life with meaning. Again, this needs to be us. If we're going to experience what she experienced, this needs to be us. There has to be a love. He has to be real. And there has to be a love for him. Thirdly, she was persuaded that there was none better. She was persuaded that he was the best. She said in verse 2 of chapter 1, "Thy love is better than wine." That is, the love of Christ is better. It is more excellent than anything else. And because it's better, and because it's more excellent, if you really believe that, if you really believe that something is better and more excellent, then it is automatically preferable. It's what you prefer. Why do you prefer it? Because it's better. Because it's more excellent. So if we believe that the love of Christ is better, that it is more excellent, then we prefer that above all else. If you prefer something else to the Lord, you've got other problems. But we see in chapter 2 and verse 3, she expresses this again. She says, "As the apple tree among the trees of the wood, so is my beloved among the sons." Now she looked at the woods. There were many apple trees in the woods. But he was in her eyes the apple tree among the trees of the woods. In other words, whatever she saw in others, she saw more in him. That needs to be us. Whatever we see in other things, in other places, in other people, we need to know that there's more in Him. And if we really believe that, then He is preferable. He is preferable to others. He is preferable to things. He is preferable to places. He is preferable to all things. If that really gets a hold of us, that He's better, that He's more excellent, that in Him is more, then you don't have to be persuaded to prefer Him. The very fact that you know that He is better, the very fact that you know He is more, settles the issue of preference. So once again, if we don't have a preference for Him, we have other issues. But this needs to be true of us, that we realize that He is the best. Fourthly, she desired His closeness. That, of course, goes without saying. If you believe that He is the best, desire to be close to Him. She desired His closeness and the display of His love. In verse 2 again of chapter 1, let Him kiss me with the kisses of His mouth. You can't kiss someone from a distance. That requires a closeness. Let Him kiss me. And she's not just talking about any kiss, with the kisses of His mouth. So what she's desiring here is an intimacy with Him. Also notice, there again in verse 2, for thy love is better than wine. Now a kiss is the display of His love. And that's what she was desiring there in verse 2. She is desiring for Him to manifest His love for her. She had experienced it in the past, and she knew that it was better than wine. It was better than anything. And she desires, again, a display of this love. This needs to be us, to desire manifestations of His love, to feel the manifestations of His love. Let Him kiss me. Someone kisses you, you know it. Someone kisses you, you feel it. She was desiring that the manifestation of His love would be known, that the manifestation of His love would be felt by her. She also, fifthly, she found great comfort in His person. She found great comfort in His person. Again, humanly, you can love someone and not find comfort in their person. We can think of family members. You love them, but you don't necessarily find comfort in them. But if you believe that another person is the very best and the most excellent, there's a degree of comfort in that. So that's where this comes from. This comfort that she finds in Him comes from the fact that she realizes that He's the best. Again, notice chapter 1, verse 3. Because of the savor of thy good ointments, she's talking to Him, thy name is as ointment poured forth. Therefore do the virgins love thee. Thy name. The name represents His character, represents who He is, represents everything that He is. So she is saying, everything that you are, it's like ointment. It's like ointment, not bottled up, but it's like ointment that's poured forth. And ointment here has reference to the anointing oil. And the anointing oil in the Old Testament was used for several things. One thing that it was used for was to make the face shine. Psalm 104 and verse 15, it says, an oil to make His face to to shine makes the face to shine. And it was used for cheering. It was used for refreshing guests at festivals. Proverbs 27 and verse 9. Ointment and perfume rejoice the heart. So when she says thy name, who you are, is like ointment poured forth. She is saying it makes my face to shine. It cheers me. It refreshes me. It was used for soothing. It was used for healing wounds. Isaiah 1 and verse 6, Isaiah spoke of wounds and bruises and putrefying sores. And he said they have not been closed, neither bound up, neither mollified with ointment. So ointment was used to soothe and heal. So she's saying everything that you are, everything about your character, everything about your person, it's like the ointment that's poured forth that brings soothing and healing to wounds. So she found great comfort in his person. If you find comfort in a person, you do not flee from that person. You do not try to avoid that person. So if you find comfort in the Lord, you don't flee from him. You don't try to avoid him, but again, you seek an intimacy, a closeness with him. So she found just who he was to make her face to shine and to cheer and refresh her and to bring soothing and healing to her. That again needs to be us if we're going to experience what she experienced. Sixthly, she pleaded with him. Verse 6 or verse 4 of chapter 1. Draw me. Draw me. She's already expressed her desire for his closeness. Let him kiss me with the kisses of his mouth. She's already expressed what he means to her, verse 3. And now she prays, draw me. The plea is, move me closer to thee. Move me closer to thee. To draw is to pull. Pull me toward thee. To draw can mean to tug me. Tug me closer to thee. But it is a prayer for him to do something on her behalf. Draw me. And what she is praying for him to do would cause her to run toward him. Draw me, we will run after thee. That is, after you draw me, we will run after me. So these are the words of someone who wants to experience him more. The more you know about him, the more you know of him, the more you want to experience him, and the more you will cry, move me closer to thee. As soon as you feel your heart moving away from God, our prayer ought to be, move me closer to thee. Pull me toward thee. It ought to be, Lord, if you have to, drag me. But draw me. Draw me. She wants to experience him more. She wants to be more identified with him. Draw me. And if you do so, we will run after thee. How do we know when God is drawing us? Because we will run after him. We will run after him. This is a plea of someone who realizes that there is the possibility to be closer to God, to be closer to him. Realizing that possibility, she prays, draw me. She also realizes the fact that to be closer to him is what is best for her. So she prays, draw me. But the fact that she says, draw me, we will run after thee, seems to imply that she realized something about herself also. That she would not run toward him unless he drew her. Unless there was the display of his effectual power. And that's what she's praying for. Draw me, we will run after thee. She is pleading for an effectual display of his power that will result in her fleeing in his direction. Fleeing toward him. Again, that needs to be us. This needs to be us if we're going to experience what she experienced. Seventhly, she sought a different path than that of the world. Notice in chapter 1, verse 7, tell me, O thou whom my soul loveth, she's speaking to him, where thou feedest. Tell me where I can find you. Because wherever that is, that's where you want to go. Where thou makest thy flock to rest at noon. And then notice what she says. For why should I be as one that turneth aside by the flocks of thy companions? Why should I go the direction that so many others are going? Here is one who was not content to go with the flow. The flow is going away from him. The flow of the world is going away from him. Why? Because they see nothing special in him. They do not prefer him. But one who sees and knows that he's special, he's more, that individual prefers him. And that individual is not satisfied with going in the direction that everybody else is moving in. She simply wanted to be where he was. She wanted to spend her day where he spent his day. Again, there's many lessons here for husbands and wives also. But this needs to be us. She had no desire to go in a different direction than him. This needs to be us. So in this woman, we see the spirit and attitude toward him that would lead her to a very special experience, a very personal experience of him. And we need to possess this attitude, this spirit. We need to possess it every single day. We need to possess it in all of our circumstances. Which brings us to the experience of this woman. And we want to notice three things about her experience. Remember her prayer in verse 4. Draw me. Her prayer was answered. Because we read in verse 4, the king hath brought me. How did he bring her? By his drawing. God has many different ways of drawing. But that's how he brought her. By his drawing. The king hath brought me. Doesn't say unto his chambers, but into his chambers. His chambers, of course, refers to the rooms of the king's palace. The king hath brought me into the rooms of his palace. In doing so, he brought her from everything else. He brought her from everything else and brought her into the rooms of his palace, the chambers. Do we know anything about this? Do we know anything about the king's chambers? Do we know anything about the king bringing us into his chambers? This is something she could feel. This is something she experienced. He hath brought me into his chambers. Can we identify with her? The king hath brought me into his chambers. So there she is, in his chambers. Now, if you enter into the rooms of a person, you become more aware of that person. In his chambers, she would become even more aware of who he is. It is in his chambers that she would experience more of who he is. And it's in his chambers today that you and I learn and experience his power, his wisdom, his holiness, his love, his grace, his abundant mercy, his long-suffering, his infinite goodness, his unending care, his glorious riches, his abundant provisions. What a blessing to know that it is possible to go into his chambers. It is possible to be brought into his chambers. She prayed, "Draw me." And the next thing she knows, she's in his chambers. He hath brought me. How many of us are willing to put absolutely everything else on the side and plead, "Draw me. Draw me right now. Right now. Doesn't matter what else is going on. Draw me right now. Draw me." Notice that it is in his chambers that she finds gladness and rejoicing. She says there in verse 4, "We will be glad and rejoice in thee." Where? In his chambers. In his chambers. There's gladness and rejoicing in his chambers. Also in his chambers, her memory is enhanced. "We will remember thy love more than wine." Remember, she said back there in chapter 1 and verse 2 that his love is better than wine. Now she's in his chambers and said, "I'll remember that thy love is better than wine." So it was in his chambers that her memory is enhanced, and that her love, and that her memory for his love is enhanced as well. So there was the experience of his chambers. Chapter 2, we see that there was the experience of his shade. Verse 3, she says, "I sat down under his shadow." I sat down under his shadow. She drew near to him. How did that come about? Again, it goes back to chapter 1, verse 4, "Draw me, we will run after thee." I sat down under his shadow. She drew near to him. And when she did, keep in mind her spirit and attitude, because this is key to the experience. You're not going to experience this without the spirit and attitude of her. When she drew near to him, she found satisfaction. She found contentment. She found pleasure. She experienced the Lord as her shade. And I believe that needs to be viewed in light of verse 6 of chapter 1. She says, I'm black because the sun hath looked upon me. My mother's children were angry with me, and they made me the keeper of the vineyards. She's talking about her mistreatment by the world. But under his shade, she finds something, she experiences something different. She experiences release from chapter 1 and verse 6. She experiences peace. She experiences security. She experiences strength and assurance under his shadow. So the psalmist said in Psalm 63 and verse 7, because thou hast been my help, therefore in the shadow of thy wings will I rejoice. Now to get in the shade of something, to get in the shadow of something, again, you have to get close to it. You can't stand 300 feet from a tree and be in the shade. You have to get closer. And so it is from the Lord. So it is with the Lord. There are so many who want to experience the Lord's shade. They want to experience the Lord's shadow, but they never get close enough to Him to do so. I sat down under His shadow. Psalmist spoke in Psalm 91 and verse 1 of abiding under the shadow of the Almighty. That's a special place. It's a very, very special place. Isaiah 32 and verse 2, we read of the shadow of a great rock in a weary land. In Isaiah 49 and verse 2, we read of the shadow of His hand. Everywhere where we read of His shadow, it's telling us that the Lord is our shade. And it was when she drew near that she found refreshment from the sun in His shade. When we sit under His shadow, though we might, and though we realize that we're weak, we also realize that He is strong. And the strength overshadows our feebleness. When we sit under His shadow, we realize that we are poor, but He is rich. And His shadow overshadows our poverty and our need. When we sit under His shadow, we realize I'm unworthy to do so. But He is worthy. And His worthiness overshadows our unworthiness. And when that happens, there's refreshment. There's great delight. There's great joy. I sat down under His shadow with great delight, it says. That as I did so with great pleasure, it brought me pleasure to draw close enough to sit under His shadow. I did so with great delight. It brought me enjoyment. There's an enjoyment about drawing close to God and sitting under His shade. Great delight speaks of satisfaction. I believe it also speaks of a fascination. As she sat there, she was fascinated. Feeling the shade of His person. She was overcome with delight. And this was not just an ordinary delight. It says, with great delight. I sat down under His shadow with great delight. And every day we can sit in His shade. And there's refreshment there. There's satisfaction there. But notice what else she experienced sitting under His shade. And His fruit was sweet to my taste. His fruit is what He offers us. And sitting there under His shadow, it was sweet to my taste. First of all, you have to have a taste for it. And therein lies a problem for many. They have no taste for the things of God. They have a taste for Egypt, but no taste for the things of God. Which brings us back to her attitude and her spirit. But now she sits under His shade. and its fruit was sweet to my taste. Again, it's what he offers us. What does he offer us? Well, he offers us his grace. Oh, how sweet that is to our taste. He offers us his food, his strength, his direction, his counsel, his consoling, his peace. And if you believe that he's the best, the most excellent, then you also have to believe that his food, his strength, his direction, his consolation, his counsel, his peace, it's the best. And if it's the best, then I prefer it above all else. So she sat there and it was sweet to his taste. May I say also that as you draw near and the longer you sit under his shade, the more refined your taste becomes for what he offers. The more you desire what he offers, and the less and less and less taste you have for that which others offer. And as she sits there under his shade, it is there that she has the opportunity to receive what he offers. So it is sitting in a shade that we develop a keener taste for what he offers, and we experience what he offers. Thirdly and lastly, verse 3, as you draw near and abide in a shade, it just keeps getting better and better. It doesn't get worse. It gets better and better. So there she is, sitting under his shade, eating of the fruit. Since she's under a tree, we can assume that it's the fruit of that tree. But she went on to say, he brought me. How? Draw me. Draw me. He brought me to the banqueting or to the feasting house. Now, may I say there's a big difference sitting under a tree eating fruit than going to a banqueting house. It just keeps getting better and better and better. And that's how it ought to be for you and I. If we're doing this right, it just keeps getting better and better and better. His fruit was sweet to my taste. I didn't find anything wrong with his fruit. You've got a real, real, real problem, more serious than you even realize, when you find something wrong with his fruit, with his food. But as she sat there, eating of that fruit, partaking of that fruit, she felt herself being moved to the feasting house. Psalm 23 and verse 5, thou preparest a table before me in the presence of mine enemies. So thankful that God prepares a table for his people. When you talk about preparing a table, you're not just seeing the food that's on that table. There's forethought that goes into it. There's planning that goes into it. You do not purposely serve what someone doesn't like, what will kill them. You serve them what will satisfy them. And so it is with him. In Luke 14 and 17, in the parable of the Great Supper, we read those words, come, for all things are now ready. And Christ speaks those words to you and I every single day. Come, for all things are now ready. every day. Every day there is a table prepared. And how insulting. Someone prepares a feast for you and you go to 7-Eleven and buy a hot dog. But that's what God's people do. A feast has been prepared, a table has been prepared by the Lord Himself, and yet they prefer to go down to Egypt and eat the onions and the garlic. No matter what else might be going on, we need to hear those words, "Come, for all things are now ready." The Lord has a banquet, and it's ready. You and I. We will not find this banquet merely among the trees of the woods, of the wood, but we find it as we sit under His shadow. You have to draw near, sit under His shade, and then from there, the longer you sit there, the better it gets. And before you know it, you've been brought to the feasting house. And I'm glad that there is such a place. But again, it just keeps getting better and better. She says in chapter 2 and verse 4, "He brought me to the banqueting house, and His banner over me was love." His banner over me was love. That is, I could feel His banner. I could feel His love all around me. She was feasting upon Him, and she felt His love. So know this today. Whatever your circumstances, whether it be a time of great physical or emotional or spiritual need, time of cares and burdens, difficulties and problems, on and on we can go. It is possible for you and I, and we have the opportunity and the privilege to live in the enjoyment of His chambers, of His shade, and in His banqueting house. And there's joy there. There's peace there. There's refreshment there. There's satisfaction there. You and I, His children of God, if we're not finding joy and peace and refreshment and satisfaction, it's because you're looking in the wrong place. Because it's there. But you don't find it going the way of the world. You find it in Him. And knowing that, first of all, we have to know that. We have to really believe that these places exist and that they're real and they're for me. And knowing that, we prefer it to all else. And we find ourselves praying, "Draw me. Draw me." And before you know it, you feel the Lord drawing you to those places. And just stay there. Live there. Those are good places to live. And I believe we can live there simultaneously with whatever we're called to do in the world. We can live in these places. So I ask you tonight, do you live in the enjoyment of His chambers? Do you live in the enjoyment of His shade? Do you live in the enjoyment of His feasting house? Do you feel His love over you as a banner? What a wonderful, wonderful life that God has given us. Brother Jim, if you'd come and lead us first song.